Hello and welcome back to the Extra Movie Better Podcast. I'm Mark the Moose Haas, here as always with the one and only JTE and the illustrious Benny Hamlin. Gentlemen, welcome back to the show. How are you guys doing?
I'm recovering from a little food poisoning, so I apologize if my super exciting, intelligent brain is not as on point as it usually is. But I'm going to, like our boy The Flash, I'm going to try to run through this thing. And maybe hit the speed force if possible.
I'm on 1 hour of sleep and functioning totally on Diet Mountain Dew, so I'm at my baseline, Moose.
Well, that's perfect. Then we're getting about the full extent of the mental capacity that we as a trio can put out. This week, we will be covering the new DCEU entry, The Flash. Speeding into theaters this weekend, the movie is actually doing less at the box office than I think everyone predicted, given the scope of this movie, the cameos in this movie, the buzz. I mean, we'll get into spoilers later in the show, but right now The Flash is trending to have a weekend that's lower than $55 million. And full disclosure, folks, we are recording this episode a day early. We usually record these on Monday, so we can put it out on Tuesdays, but we have a special guest coming on to talk spoilers for our third segment, and that is the outlaw John Rocha. So we wanted to make sure that we at least got in our thoughts on where the box office is currently trending. Right now, the Flash is looking to finish at about $55 million, which you have to imagine is a huge disappointment for DC. Coming in second, Spider-Verse still holding pretty strong, $30 million over the weekend. Not bad for its third week. Number three, Elementals. It's trending less than $30 million currently. Aside from Lightyear last year, this would be the lowest Pixar release. So again, we have to assume that Disney and Pixar are probably not happy with these numbers. Coming in fourth, Transformers Rise of the Beast. Big drop from week one to week two. Still doing gangbusters internationally. We knew they would. And number five, rounding out the top five, The Little Mermaid. Still going strong. We're a month after that movie's come out. That movie's still in the top five. Still doing good. So the House of Mouse has got to be happy about that, but probably disappointed, right? And the Elementals coming out third. JT, kick us off. What do you think, man?
Yeah, Pixar has just lost some of its luster lately. I remember Lightyear being a pretty big disappointment. And the problem with me is the last time I actually really loved a Pixar movie would probably be Soul, which was during COVID, didn't even get a full theatrical release. And they also, I feel like they kind of hurt themselves a little bit because then they went and put Turning Red onto streaming also, which I thought was really good. Like the two of their best films in their last like five or six went straight to streaming and didn't have that theatrical window. So part of me feels like when they did go back to the theatrical window, they came out with Lightyear, which a lot of people were just confused by, and it was an okay movie. And then this movie, I hear mixed things. I hear some people saying it's really good, it's really lovely, but the trailer did nothing for me. I saw the trailer and I was like, water and fire? Like, this is like, I feel like a third grader came up with this concept like while he was coloring with crayons in his school, and he's like, ooh, fire like water. Like, it didn't feel like when I saw the trailer for Inside Out, where I was like, wow, that's a really genius angle. Like, there's some really cool, you know, imaginative stuff going on here, and I just don't feel that way when I saw External. It feels like Cars. Hey, let's make Cars into cartoons. It's like, let's make water and fire into a cartoon. It feels like more it should be a Pixar short than a feature film. Now, I haven't seen the film yet. I probably will eventually check it out. And I hear like from some people that I know that's really good. So, but nothing about those trailers screamed to me, oh, I got to go see this opening weekend. So I'm not surprised by $29 million it's making or so.
And what about your thoughts on The Flash? DC can't be happy with a $55 million debut of this gangbusters movie.
There's two sides of the coin for me. One, I think there is some superhero fatigue setting in a little bit here. I think Guardians being the exception, but that's a third in a trilogy. This is The Flash, I don't know how popular The Flash is in common culture. He's not Spider-Man. Spider-Man is a household name that every single person knows. I don't think Flash ever got to that Spider-Man level. So I'm just not sure how much the public was yearning for a Flash movie. And the way DCU kind of did a backwards way of introducing him in Justice League, yeah, it gets him out there. But why did Aquaman open up to like huge numbers in The Flash when you have a new Batman or an old Batman and then you have Supergirl introduced? The only thing that comes down to me is it has to be just superhero fatigue. And because I think when it comes down, a lot of people say, you know, well, it's because people don't know where the DCU is going. The modern public doesn't read all the DCU behind the scenes stuff. They don't really care about like what DC is redoing or revamping. Most people just want to go see a good movie. And something about The Flash is honestly did not connect with them. Michael, and then the other side of coin is I'm disappointed in everybody for not seeing Michael Keaton as Batman again. I think for a lot of us, like especially on this show, that was the main draw in a lot of ways. And maybe the public, maybe, you know, the younger generation doesn't have that connection. Unlike Spider-Man No Way Home, you had Andrew Garfield and you had Tobey Maguire. You were kind of playing to both generations. You're playing to the older Tobey fans. You're playing to the Andrew Garfield fans. This is when you just had Michael Keaton. And I guess unless you were born in the 80s and early 90s like us, maybe they didn't care as much.
How about you, Benny? What are your thoughts on this box office?
As far as the Pixar goes, like I am that 2% on Rotten Tomatoes that downvotes the Pixar movies. I just don't enjoy them, and that's just a personal taste thing. But there was no momentum for this movie at any point. Like I never felt like anybody was interested in going and seeing this. Every review, every article I've read about it has been in the middle of the road, and it is being released in a summer market that has 8 trillion movies for families out right now that are all better than it, at least according to the reviews. I've not seen that movie, so I can't like say that for myself. But so if you have The Little Mermaid, you have Transformers, you have The Flash, you have Into the Spider-Verse, a better animated movie out. You even have Mario hanging out in theaters and available on streaming. So if a family's wanting to have a movie night, they're it's just not the option they're going to choose right now. There are just so many more like brighter, shiny options out there. I think this had been released in February or right before Christmas. I'm sure it would have made its money, but as it is, it was released in a terrible place and it was released with no momentum. Now going to The Flash, I think there are 3 things affecting The Flash right now. First of all is bad timing with the marketing. Because when they were having the CinemaCon, when they had first like shown the movie to all the critics and James Gunn and all these big wigs were putting out how this is the greatest superhero movie, and they dropped the new Michael Keaton trailer all in that little same time span. You know, it was all the little nerdverse buzz for about 2 or 3 weeks right there. Everybody was super amped for The Flash. And then the movie didn't come out for another month still. And so the news cycle moved on. The momentum died out. People were talking about other things. So I think it missed its window. So I really think it probably lost about $20 million in box office just from missing its momentum window. And then the second thing that I think has happened is there is a certain level of superhero fatigue, but I think it's more of a connectedness fatigue. I think once we hit Endgame, people were just like, okay, this is the end of the connected universe. And so people are not going to go to a movie just because it's in some way connected to other, you know, other films. And I think that's what the DCEU's whole draw was supposed to be. So you have the Flash movie, which is connected to a universe that no longer exists. It's being sold on connectiveness that people aren't interested now, that we've moved on for them. And so all you're left is this an interesting movie that I want to see. And apparently not a lot of people did.
Go ahead, Benny. I'm sorry. You had one more point to make.
And I think a lot of it is the nostalgia for Michael Keaton has aged out some. Like the general movie going audience right now that is 20 and 30, like to JTE's point with the Spider-Man, those movies are 20 years old now. So if you're in your 20s and 30s, when you were growing up, those were on TV all the time. you know, those were on Netflix streaming all the time. You grew up, that's part of your childhood. The Michael Keaton Batman movies now, they're coming up on 40 years old. So unless you're in your 40s or 50s, you don't have that nostalgia kick to it. So I think that $50 million that you got were the 40-year and 50-year-old people taking their teenage kids to see it.
I definitely think you touched on a point that I wanted to stretch out a little bit in my thoughts, which was the announcement when James Gunn was announced that he and his partner were going to be taking over the DCEU. He immediately said that he was going to be recasting and basically revamping a whole new DC universe. And for me, that cheapens any DC movie that's released between now and when the reboot comes. Because I know that all of this is just, at this point, like moot. Like, it's not going to matter. We're not going to see these characters again. So the way that I, like, knowing that, the way that I went into The Flash watching it was like, okay, this is probably going to be a swan song for some of them. This is probably going to be a farewell. Let's see how they handle that. But also, to your point, Benny, like, unless there's a connective tissue, like, some people are just don't want to continue the story. Ah, well, you know, next year or the year after is when I'll start up with the DC movies again. I do think that there is a level of fatigue, superhero fatigue, that's for sure. I mean, we've seen it pretty much in, all, you know, the last 2 years worth of superhero movies. Guardians is the exception because Guardians, to JTE's point, was completing a trilogy of movies and characters that people really loved. People loved the Guardians of the Galaxies. And I love those characters. So yeah, I saw that movie twice in theaters. But yeah, I think that there's a lot of things that are happening. And I'll agree with the Michael Keaton fatigue. We were so excited for this because the three of us are, Keaton was our first Batman. And we wanted to see Keaton don the mask again. We knew we were going to get some Ben Affleck in this movie. So I genuinely was excited to see this movie. I'm not the largest DCU fan, and we'll break that down in the next segment where we rank our DCEU movies. But I am a little surprised because there was so much. They were introducing a Supergirl character. You knew that you were going to be getting Ben Affleck's Batfleck back. So, I mean, I'm quite frankly, I'm kind of shocked. And so I have to go logically and say, okay, people are tired of superheroes. People don't want to continue a story that's just going to end in, you know, the next Aquaman movie, which by all accounts looks like it's going to be terrible. So yeah, interesting box office over the weekend. Elementals, this was a weird time for Elementals to be released. I don't know if the marketing was great for this movie. I personally wasn't excited to see it. I am hearing some of our colleagues' reviews of Elementals. I still would like to see it, and I plan on seeing it probably sometime this next week. But this is a busy summer. There are a lot of blockbuster movies. I mean, this summer is always blockbuster, but this is kind of the year that the like movie blockbusters are back, really back, because people are going out and they're spending millions and millions and hundreds of millions of dollars to go see movies again in theaters. This seems like this should have been released like October, November, when the blockbuster seasons are kind of dying down. Disney already has a couple chips in the big game, right? They already have The Little Mermaid already playing out in theaters. They've got Indiana Jones coming out soon. This just feels like a weird time for Disney to release the Elementals. It's not, for me, this movie doesn't look like a blockbuster. Like, it can contend with a Transformers Rise of the Beast or an Indiana Jones and the Dial of Destiny or even the Spider-Verse, like you said, Benny. A far superior animated movie. So it is weird in terms of my opinion as to when Disney released the Elementals. This really probably should have been rethought. I mean, Disney just reshuffled a bunch of release dates. Why didn't they look at Elementals and be like, dude, there's no way this can contend with Miles Morales and, you know, Megatron. So I don't know. Weird timing as far as I'm concerned. Now, a few other movies. Oh, go ahead, JT.
Real quick. Yeah, I also read a lot of people from Pixar who, you know, worked on these last few films, that their movies went straight to streaming, that they feel like by doing that in their last few films, you kind of made it feel like Pixar is not something you need to go to the theater to see. It's like, now that everyone has Disney Plus, I should just wait for this to be on my TV so my kids can just watch it over and over. And I kind of understand that complaint a little bit, because when you start giving something for free, it's hard to ask somebody to pay for it. Like, anytime, so, like, I have AMC A-List. If I had to pay for a movie every week, I feel like I'd feel miserable. I love having that free subscription where I can just, oh, I don't have to worry about it. So I do feel like, unless it's a Toy Story 5 or something like Finding Dory 3 or whatever, unless it's something that's already super established, I don't know if people are going to run out and see a Pixar movie when they can just wait a month and see it on Disney Plus.
Now, two other movies were released this weekend. One was Wes Anderson's newest movie, Asteroid, and the other was a streaming movie, Extraction. Now, I don't think Benny and I have seen either of these. However, our very own JT has. Your quick thoughts on those movies?
Yeah, Asteroid City, I'll touch on that first. We went to a theater in Hollywood that where they basically took two floors and they made it into like a whole event. So you could go around. I got t-shirts, I got free popcorn soda, but there were photo opportunities where they had recreated sets from the movie. So it was a really fun experience. Then we sat down and watched the movie. And listen, I tweeted something about this on Twitter yesterday. I'm a huge Wes Anderson fan. His first three films, Ball Rocket, Rushmore, and Royal Tenenbaums, are three of just my favorite movies ever. I love those three films. They're so influential to me as a film geek growing up. I saw them in I've seen every single film that Wes Anderson has directed in theaters except for Ball Rocket, because at that point no one knew who Wes Anderson was.
Right.
And the reason I saw Ball Rocket was because on an episode of Siskel and Ebert, after Gene Siskel passed away, Martin Scorsese came on the show, and they did their top 10 films of the 90s. And Martin Scorsese put Ball Rocket as one of his top 10 films of the 90s. And I said, what is this movie? I need to go find it immediately. I found it on VHS, and it's been – I consider it a top 5 film for me. Like, people say, like, what's one of your all-time favorite films? Ball Rocket is, like, in my top 5. I just absolutely love that film. It's an amazing movie. So those early films of Wes Anderson, I feel like what made those movies so great to me is while his style was present and his musical choices and everything, he had one foot in the real world. It felt like you were watching something that was could actually happen. And as he's graduated as a director and evolved, he has created this style that is almost – it's almost like a live-action animated film in some ways. The camera always pans. Everything is – the set design, everything, it feels – but it feels like it's not in our world anymore. You are in a Wes Anderson universe. There is no way any of these movies feel like they had happened in the real world. And I think since that has happened, I miss the old Wes Anderson. So I know a lot of people love this movie, and I don't think it's a bad movie by any means. And I don't think his last film was that bad. I actually loved Grand Budapest. I thought it was the perfect mix of his style and actually having a lot of human emotion. I don't know. Maybe it's because I grew up with those films. I miss him having a little bit more of a natural filmmaking style instead of this very heightened, very artistic, very deliberate style. Maybe this is his final form and this is what he's always wanted to be. And I get that. And if you love it, I totally understand. I like the movie. At the end of the day, I sat down, I liked it, I enjoyed it, but I feel like I'm not discovering anything new anymore. I feel like I could see all his tricks. I feel like there's no new tricks in his bag these days. So when I saw the movie, I just felt like, yeah, this is a Wes Anderson movie, and everything I pretty much expected to happen. While, you know, there are some interesting things in the movie that he deals with, because the character's line delivery has such a weird tone and it doesn't really involve a lot of emotion, everything seems to be kind of seething underneath. And I missed movies like Royal Tenenbaums where Ben Stiller actually gets angry and has emotions. I enjoyed it, but I think I'm kind of just missing my old Wes Anderson, and I think I'm just getting a little tired of his style and his aesthetic.
Now, what's your thoughts on Extraction? I'm curious about this one.
Yeah, let me tell you something. I was not a big fan of the first Extraction, and I think a lot of people be surprised by that because I'm a huge like action film buff. And I remember watching the first Extraction, and it was one of the first times I watched an action movie, and I said, wow, there's some really great action in this, but I could not give a damn about any of the characters. I don't care. The story felt so paint by numbers to me. It felt like this, and I guess maybe I went in the wrong headspace, because you should probably go into these movies not really wanting much of a story. You just want good action. But I need something. I need something to put, you know, my brain into some sort of caring for this character when he's actually in danger. And I think part of it might actually be Chris Hemsworth. Listen, I like Chris Hemsworth's Thor, but as like, you know, this John Wick type action hero mercenary, he doesn't quite work for me. And I'm not sure why, because I like Chris Hemsworth the most when he's allowed to use some of his humor, his charm. And Extraction doesn't really have that. I'm going to make a really weird comparison. Steven Seagal is not a good actor.
Oh.
But if I watched Mark for Death or Out for Justice, there's something about that guy just makes me want to watch him kick people's asses. And that's what made him a star. Not because he was a good actor, but he had something. Jean-Claude Van Damme had a certain something that just made you be like, I don't know. I'm buying this guy in Universal Soldier and Nowhere to Run. I just don't think Chris Hemsworth has that. He doesn't have whatever those guys had. And it feels like they're trying to make him one of those guys. And while he does have the physicality and all that, he just doesn't come off as like a badass to me. But that's just a personal taste for myself.
Let me ask you this. Can anyone have that anymore? Like all those guys you're talking about, like peaked by 1994.
Agreed.
And there haven't been any guys like that since. I don't know if you can have a guy like that.
I would say some people come close to it. I think Jason Statham had a pretty good run there where he felt like he was kind of like that kind of guy for the 2000s. And Keanu Reeves, I love him in John Wick movies. He has something there where I'm like, he doesn't have to say much in that movie. John Wick 4, he barely says anything, and I'm still kind of have a gravity towards him where I'm like, yeah, something about this guy is just super cool. I just don't have that for Chris Hemsworth.
You've been gravitating towards Keanu Reeves since the 80s, since Point Blank, man.
Yeah, isn't that true?
So he's not a modern creation. Yeah. And Jason Statham, the Guy Ritchie movies are great, but like that dude couldn't fight his way out of a paper bag in real life. You feel that? I can't stand his action.
Well, about like a Liam Neeson? Like Liam Neeson transitioned from like serious actor to like older action badass star. Like, could you view him as kind of that guy who doesn't need? Because Liam Neeson, like, maybe he can make you cry in one scene and then beat your ass in the next scene. So, I mean, what's your thoughts on like Liam Neeson being that action star?
I mean, he had his moment, but that's a different way. He's just a great actor.
Yeah.
So, to me, it's more just he's a great actor who's given something, and I feel like Liam Neeson could pretty much do anything. He's that good of an actor. Chris Hemsworth is not that great of an actor. He has to go by his charm and his charisma a little bit more, but I just don't think these movies are – there were times where I watched the first Extraction. I was like, another actor might have made this movie better for me. But all that being said, even though I wasn't a big fan of Extraction, I think Extraction 2 is way better. It's a way bigger budget and had some of the best action I've seen the last couple of years. Like, it's up there. It's not John Wick 4 level, but it is pretty close. And it is really, really inventive and entertaining with its action. But here's the thing. The story was, again, very paint by numbers. And I felt like anytime there was action going on, I was just kind of I was kind of just toning it out and being like, get to the next action sequence, because I'm not really here for the story. I'm not really here for the characters. But the action's so impressive. There's like a 21-minute, you know, one shot, which is obviously used with CGI, but still very impressive. So I guess it really comes down to if there were times in this movie where I just fast forwarded a few minutes because there was like, all right, there's no dialogue. There's just dialogue for the next 10 minutes. And as I'm fast forwarding, I know everything that's happening because everything is so paid by the numbers. I'm like, okay, yep, to go into the house. Yep. Okay. He's going to double cross and blah, blah, blah. And then once the action started, I would stop and start watching it again. I only did that maybe once or twice throughout the whole movie because it is pretty action packed from beginning to end. Good, better sequel. Here's the thing. I will say it is a better sequel. Better action, really great scenes of like inventive action sequences, but not a great movie. Just a great action movie at times.
Well, we're only going to cover one more news story because we want to make sure we give ourselves enough time with our special guest, John Rocha. So I'm going to pick the best of the news stories that I have. And this has got to be the battle for the IMAX theaters. I find this fascinating. So Tom Cruise is currently fuming right now because Mission Impossible, the newest Mission Impossible, will only be able to be in IMAX theaters for 1 week, following which all IMAX theaters will be showing Oppenheimer. This is an interesting choice because we talked about this a few weeks ago when we were talking about the Oppenheimer R rating. This movie, I don't feel like Oppenheimer is going to do gangbusters like Mission Impossible is going to do. And so I have to ask myself, like, what the hell are IMAX theaters thinking by not pumping in? Because you pay more for an IMAX experience. Why would you not be showing at least a 50-50 split? Because people are going to want to go see Mission Impossible. They're going to want to go see it again. This Mission Impossible might be the biggest movie of the summer, in my opinion. Whereas Oppenheimer is going to feel a little bit more like a smaller movie. This is fascinating to me. I'd love to get your thoughts. Benny, let's start with you, pal.
I think if you're going to see Cillian Murphy bang somebody's wife, you want to see it on a 100-foot screen. I mean, I really think that's what it comes down to here. But in all seriousness,
that's a different kind of explosion.
Man, you had me choking on my coffee right there.
but in all seriousness, I think this is a very odd choice because I don't think Oppenheimer is going to be a super actiony movie. And other than the nuclear explosions, I don't know what visually you would need to explore with a physicist life. And then on top of that, it's a 3-hour movie. So the number of showings you're going to get in a day is going to be less. I'm not sure what the runtime of Mission Impossible is, but I doubt it's going to be clocking in at 3 hours. So I think they're just losing all money. The only thing I could think of is, if it has something to do with the studios that are producing them, if the theater owners are somewhat salty, is Oppenheimer still Warner Brothers or no? Do we know that?
I believe so. I think all his films are Warner Brothers, aren't they?
Well, he had a falling out with them, so I wasn't sure if Oppenheimer was released under Warner
Brothers.
I'll
check while you talk.
But the only thing that I could think of is if this was something to do with the theater owners and the studios as opposed to the film itself. Because you're right, if it just comes down to the film, you're losing money by not having Mission Impossible in
this. It is a Universal Pictures.
Okay. Mm. That is the only thing that I could think of is that, Paramount and Warner Brothers were, I believe, studios that shorted the theatrical window, but I'm not savvy in the Hollywood business to know if that's the case.
How about you, JT? What's your thoughts on this? You're the one who proposed this, actually.
Yeah. You know, I wouldn't be surprised if Christopher Nolan has stock into IMAX. The guy has been the champion, like the spokesman for IMAX. So I think this really just comes down to like a business relationship. And this is a little effect of COVID because Mission Impossible was supposed to come out, a year and a half ago or a year ago. And because, like you said, this summer is the return of all these summer movies. Universal should have done a better job of making sure they put Mission Impossible somewhere where it actually had some time to breathe into the IMAX screens, because unfortunately it is going up against Christopher Nolan, the godfather of IMAX. His relationship with IMAX alone is gonna, he shot the whole thing in IMAX. I'm sure some sequences were shot in IMAX for this new film. I'm not even sure if they did. They haven't really advertised IMAX much for it, but the last one was, so I gotta assume something in here was shot in IMAX. I heard like the film for Oppenheimer is like 11 miles long or something like that. Like he went all out with these IMAX cameras and IMAX film. And I think no way he was going to do that unless he had IMAX saying you will have every IMAX screen if you film with all IMAX. And Tom Cruise has a lot of power in this, he's Tom Cruise. But at the end of the day, this, I feel like the relationship between Nolan and IMAX is stronger than the pull that Tom Cruise might have.
Well, folks, we are going to take a commercial break, but stay tuned because next, your favorite fearsome threesome are going to break down our rankings of the DCEU movies. A lot of shitbox movies coming up.
Dun, 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 dun. The Star Wars trilogy is back on the big screen and in selected bags of Doritos. Everyone's excited, some more than others.
Help me, Obi-Wan, your only hope.
Chewie. Don't worry about me. You gotta rescue the princess now.
Luke, I am your father. It's true.
Now celebrate with Star Wars 3D motion cards. Collect all 6 in specially marked bags of Doritos tortilla chips.
Yoda, I've come to complete my training.
Hundreds of thousands missing. No bodies, no graves, no witnesses.
For centuries, they told us the terror would come from above. What if it came from below?
It's nothing.
It's here! It's all around us!
What are we dealing with here? Biological, chemical, or other?
I'm leaning toward other.
Phantoms. Rated R. Starts everywhere January 23rd.
Welcome back. We really, really do have the best sponsors in the business, folks. Your favorite fearsome threesome here are now going to break down our favorite DCU movies, and we're going to rank them 12 to 1. 1 being the best, 12 being the biggest shitbox the DCU has put out yet. I'm very curious about this because much like last week with the Transformers, there's a lot of bad movies in this stable. So I want to start with Benny, who is the king of bad movies, to give me your top 12, and then we'll have a brief discussion over how we got there. Benny,
quick question. Away, quick question before we start. Are we counting The Flash? Are we counting? Because I know we're about to do the review. I could take it out. I have it in here, but I just want to, you know, is that going to give it? What do you guys feel? Do we count The Flash in our DCU ranking?
I think we should.
Okay. All right.
I'm going to just quickly revise mine. So that makes this 13 movies then.
Well, let me see. I have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14 films.
We are not counting The Batman because that is a standalone movie.
Okay.
That is not part of the connective universe that is the DCEU. Otherwise, that would be my number one. Spoiler.
Because that is not in my list, so we're good.
Okay. Benny, give us your top 13, baby.
All right. I'm going to start at the bottom and work my way up.
Nice.
So at 13th, I have Birds of Prey coming in. So, and no, people love it, but to me, it's just a bunch of color vomit and dialogue that makes no sense. Just not my cup of tea.
Fair enough.
Then Shazam 2 and 1, whichever order you want to put them in. Shazams are fine, but they are incredibly generic. And then Black Adam. Actually, all three of those movies are interchangeable. They're the same fulcrum of super generic 90s superhero movies. Then Joss Whedon's Justice League, which is a train wreck. It was Joss Whedon's blah of a Zack Snyder movie. Wonder Woman 84, the biggest disappointment out of the entire DCEU. For some reason, they decided to shoot half of the movie in pitch black with everyone wearing black clothes. Then James Gunn's Suicide Squad, which is a good movie, but it felt oddly out of place in the DCEU. And then there's a delineation. So right after that, we get into the DCEU movies that I will happily watch again. All those, I don't really care if I see them again or not. So then we have the original Suicide Squad. Say what you will that it's a music video, but it's a good fun music video. Aquaman, a slightly less generic superhero movie. Zack Snyder's Justice League, an incredibly good Enya video. Then then you have Flashpoint, which we'll talk about here in a bit. Wonder Woman, just a really strong superhero movie. Man of Steel, the best Superman movie ever made. And the king of the DCEU, Batman versus Superman. The entire movie as a whole may not work, but that first scene with Batman running through the carnage, that 15-minute block of cinema is better than anything else any of these movies produced, and I will always remember that first 20 minutes regardless of how the movie turned out. And
so no Zack Snyder's Justice League.
I have Zack Snyder's Justice
League. Oh, you did?
Yeah, no, yeah, he ended in there. That's what he described as the Enya video.
Oh, that's the Enya one. Yeah, okay, sorry. All right.
JTE, take us away. What do you got?
A little similar to your list. I mean, Benny seemed to be pretty close on this one. A few changes. The last is Justice League. I think it is just it is too many cooks in the kitchen. That is just... I'll never watch it again because of Zack Snyder's Justice League. I'll never watch that original Justice League again. So it's kind of like a write-off. Don't need it. After that, I'm going Wonder Woman 1984. I agree with Benny. Probably the biggest disappointment out of all these films. When I walked into that theater and how much I loved the first Wonder Woman, my expectations were high. And I still don't know what the hell I watched. What was going on at the end? Like the whole world made a wish and everyone was things going crazy. It makes no sense in the DCU. Like, did nobody remember this giant global event where everyone made? Anyway, I could do a whole podcast on Wonder Woman 1984. Then, just like Benny, I'm going Shazam, Fury of the Gods, followed by Shazam. They're fine. I think they're fine, but they don't have a lot of rewatchability for me. I don't know if this is because I don't connect to the story as much. Zachary Levi is fine. I mean, he's fun, but especially Fear of the Gods, a lot of complaints were like he felt like the character he was as a kid and adult were felt two different people. It didn't feel like he was playing a grown-up version. It felt like he was playing a different person. After Shazam, Fear of the Gods, and Shazam, I'm then going to Birds of Prey. A very fun movie in a lot of ways. I don't like dislike this movie. I think it's actually really fun and it has kind of a weird like Batman Forever vibe to it in some ways. Like the characters are just so over the top. Ewan McGregor is great as the villain in this film, and I watch it mainly for him. And all the girls do a great job too. And you know, Harley Quinn is a fun character. Then I'm going very similar to Benny, The Suicide Squad, followed by Suicide Squad. So I have back to back, and I think this is going to be one of the more controversial picks because I think a lot of people love The Suicide Squad and hate Suicide Squad. But The Suicide Squad to me felt like James Gunn just recycling a lot of the things he already did in the MCU and bringing it to the DCU. And it felt, I don't know, just there's some really fun moments in there. And I really like John Cena's Peacemaker, and I loved his show actually. His show on HBO was amazing. But I felt I kind of left the movie underwhelmed and didn't really move the needle in either way. Now, Suicide Squad is in some ways horrible, yet Will Smith alone, this is why he's an A-list movie star, because him alone in that movie carries that film through the rough patches. And I think the ensemble cast is actually really fun. The problem is the script is all over the place. The editing is all over the place. It's like a music video. But David Ayer was doing something different than any other DCU films. And I kind of want to reward that more than a movie that felt very safe and repetitive like The Suicide Squad. Even though at the end of the day, The Suicide Squad is probably a better made film, I just see myself revisiting the original Suicide Squad more because of how crazy bad it is at times and good.
It's a better film, but it's a parody of the DCEU done by a Marvel director at the time.
Exactly. All right, so we're getting to the middle of my list. After Suicide Squad, I'm going The Flash right in the middle. I can't wait to get into the review and talk about that a little bit more, but great Keaton. Love having him back. And there's some really good stuff in there. Then I'm going Batman v Superman, Dawn of Justice. And I'm going with the director's cut, the ultimate cut, whatever it is, because I do think it tells the story overall better. And listen, that Batman scene in the warehouse is one of the best Batman scenes ever put to film. I'll argue that with anybody. So, and I love Batman, and Batman does get pushed aside a little bit in this movie, and I wish he was had a little bit more to do, but I still love it, and I still love Zack Snyder's style. After that, I'm going Aquaman, which is like, you know, 11-year-old was given $300 million in all his toys, and he's just as high on sugar and Kool-Aid and went crazy, and I love it. There's an explosion every 5 minutes out of nowhere. The opening scene with Nicole Kidman, this movie feels like a cartoon from the 90s or late 80s come to life with a huge budget, and I kind of love it for that. Then my top three, I got Wonder Woman. I think the original Wonder Woman is still one of the best DCU films. The ending is like emotional. The action is awesome. The scene where No Man's Land, where she walks across, is iconic. So Wonder Woman's my number three. Going down to the last two, number two is Zack Snyder's Justice League. I love that film. I just thought it was a crime that I didn't get to see that in IMAX. I would love to see that film in a giant IMAX theater. And I think it feels like Lord of the Rings meets the DCEU. Like, it really felt like an epic of, like, huge proportions. And everybody got their moment to shine. The Speed Force in that scene at the end is amazing. And you got, I mean, as a geek, I got to see Darkseid and all this stuff. I just loved it. And then number one, Man of Steel. I'm a huge Superman fan. When I first saw Man of Steel, I didn't love it. It was something that was so different that it kind of was jarring for me. But as time has gone on, I keep going back to it. Watching that final battle with, you know, the Earth, the machine that's like transforming the Earth, it's amazing. Like, it's some of the best Superman action I've been waiting for since I was a kid watching Christopher Reeves. Those movies were handicapped by the effects that we had in those days. But you watch this movie at the end, some people said it was overkill and too much. I said, give me more. I've been waiting for a Superman at this epic level my whole life. And Zack Snyder, I think, delivered that epicness at the end of that film. And I love the score to that movie.
I am I have some similarities with you guys, but as per usual, I'll probably be the the rogue outlier here. My number 12 is Shazam, or excuse me, my number 13 is Shazam Fury of the Gods. That movie is awful. There is, I cannot speak more negatively about that movie. And I'm a superhero geek. I'm not getting fatigue. I still go and see these movies. That movie was garbage. My number 12 is Wonder Woman 1984. I agree with everything you guys are saying. Wonder Woman is, the original Wonder Woman is incredible. I don't, the main villain in this is a magic rock. Like, I don't get it. Yeah, I don't understand. That was such a weird choice. All, we were hyped to see Cheetah, and then we get like 30-second fight between Wonder Woman and Cheetah, and it's over.
So bad.
Yeah, so many wasted opportunities with that. My number, or my next up would be Justice League. You guys have said it. I'll agree with you. Too many hands in the pots. Just the movie, I remember walking out of that just going like, they rushed it. They rushed it. Like, you were trying to catch up with Marvel, and Marvel had 7 to 10 years or 7 to 8 years worth of character building invested in their characters. And it was like, okay, here's Wonder Woman. She's got her movie. And Batman and Superman, kind of. And oh, by the way, here's the Flash, and here's Cyborg, and there's a new Alfred. Boom, get him. Like, yeah, Aquaman. It was just, it was terrible. Oh, and Aquaman, yeah. Number 10 is, or excuse me, my next up is Suicide Squad. I ranked the other Suicide Squad just slightly, James Gunn Suicide Squad, just slightly higher. Both of these movies to me are underwhelming. To your guys' point, like, there is fun to be had with the Will Smith, and because it's Will Smith being Will Smith as, you know, Deadshot, like, it's fun to be able to see that. There is that one sequence where, like, it's just him, like, he's kind of taking the lead, like, with the line of shooters, and he's just single-handedly taking on all these guys. And that scene right there was like, okay, that's sweet. And then we get the Enchantress dancing, and it's like, okay, never mind. so, yeah, there's just, I know somewhere exists, like, that movie was supposed to be a lot more serious, and then they came back and they were like, no, we got to make this like Guardians of the Galaxy. Yeah. And that's where they failed. Like, somewhere in there is a serious movie that I would have liked to have seen. Or you should have just not reshot the movie to be a half and half. You should have just reshot the whole movie and been like, okay, we've got the money. Let's just reinvest in the more like fun movie. So some of the fun works, some of it doesn't. Next up is Aquaman. Look, Jason Momoa, that dude sweats charisma. Like, he is seriously one of the most charismatic dudes, but this movie just doesn't work for me too much. I don't know. Maybe it's the fact that there's like a octopus in one scene playing the drums while they're like him and his brother are fighting. It's like, what is this? The Little Mermaid? Like, I don't know. Just pick a lane. If you're going for the goofy aspect, go goofy aspect. If you're going for a serious aspect, like, pick a lane with it. The movie kind of felt all over the place. The scenes with the trench, though, were awesome. Yeah. I'll defend those. So that whole segment with the trench, and I remember right after that movie came out, there was talks that they were maybe going to make a spinoff of the trench. That whole portion of it was fascinating to me, and that felt like a horror movie. So I enjoyed that segment of it, and Black Manta in that movie is the best part of the movie. Right above Aquaman is Black Adam. Black Adam's fine. Yeah, it was fun. Felt like a 90s movie.
That's an interesting take.
Yeah.
I think I skipped over Black Adam on my list. So
I'm not going to elaborate too much.
Yeah, like, I'll just say I had Black Adam above Birds of Prey and below the Suicide Squad. So just so you know where mine was kind of going. But yeah, I agree with Moose. It was like, again, Saturday morning cartoon, kind of like Aquaman, but a lesser version of. So for me, it was kind of like, okay, The Rock is here to save the DCU. Nope. Instead, he just kind of buried it.
It reminds me of that movie Priest with Paul Bettany. I don't really know why. Not logical. To me, they feel like they're in the same little universe.
Agreed.
I mean, Black Adam maybe would have been better with Paul Bettany in it. I don't know. But I mean, the Dr. Fate stuff was cool with Pierce Brosnan. I'll give that a little bit of a shout out. That was pretty sweet. Next is The Suicide Squad. The movie worked for me, and then it didn't work for me, and then it worked for me, and then it didn't work for me. Like, there was things I could walk away and be like, dude, I really liked Idris Elba in this movie. He was great. And then I'll walk away and be like, oh, but they fucking killed Rick Flag. Like, he finally, like, James Gunn finally made Rick Flag's character cool, because he was the worst part of the first one. And then the second one, or in The Suicide Squad, he's amazing. He's awesome. And then, oh, damn, Peacemaker killed him. Like, I don't know. I walked out of that movie just, like, conflicted. So the things that I did like, I will highly praise, and that's why it's much higher up there. But the things I disliked about that movie definitely will never put this in, like, my top five. Next is Shazam. I like the original Shazam, or the first one. Excuse me. I think it was fun. I actually think, like, the kid and Zachary Levi play together very well. And then I think the child and the adult version in the second movie are on totally different pages. So it just doesn't work. And the first one, it works well. And it's a smaller story. It's got a little bit of, like, horror element with the, you know, the seven deadly sins. So there's a lot that I liked about Shazam. Everything that I liked about Shazam was absent from the second movie. And then next up is The Flash. We'll go into that in the next segment with Mr. Rocha. But a lot I liked about this movie, it is fan service overload. I'm going to say that right now. But I love fan service, so give me all you got. Next up is Birds of Prey. I figured you guys weren't going to, or Benny wasn't going to like how high this one was, but Birds of Prey is in my top five. I dug it. I actually think it's a lot of fun. I agree with JT. I think Ewan McGregor is having a blast. I love Margot Robbie as Harley Quinn. That's honestly, like, she was the best casting in, maybe aside from, like, Henry Cavill as the Man of Steel.
Jared Leto.
But what I like so much about Birds of Prey is that they mock the whole Jared Leto thing.
Yeah.
So it's just fun. It's Harley Quinn's world, which is a crazy, colorful, wild, you know, universe in her own mind. And so that's the way the movie looks the way that it does. But I enjoyed Birds of Prey quite a bit. Snyder Cut Justice League is next. I could shave off about 25 to 30 minutes of that movie, and then that movie would be perfect. And that would be the top of this list. But it's too long. It's like almost 5 hours long. And it's unnecessary. There are just certain segments where Zack Snyder's just being Zack Snyder, and he wants the newest, like, indie pop band to have their song covered while, you know, Batman moves in slow motion. Like, but I liked what they did with Darkseid. I love that Steppenwolf, like, isn't just kind of a one-note villain. Like, there's a history between these two. And I like that they explored that a lot more. I like that they explored Cyborg a lot more and The Flash a lot more, because they gave us some final context. The scenes with Willem Dafoe were added back in that were cut from the original Justice League. Because if you, like, when I saw Justice League in theaters, his name popped up on screen during the credits. And I was like, wait, what? So I liked a lot of what he did, but like I said, it's just too long. Shave down some of the, like, musical sequences. You don't need to play the whole song. You don't need the Icelandic women standing out there for 25 minutes singing their Icelandic hymn as Aquaman.
Hard disagree.
Need more.
That's right.
But that's Zack Snyder's take. So I do think that they should have just shaved that down and made it like a good 3.5 hour movie. And I would consider that the top of this list. Next is Batman versus Superman. And to JTE's point, the director's cut is a solid movie. And I 100% agree with you, Benny. Like, getting my wife into superhero movies was a bit of a, like, uphill battle, because she liked the Iron Man movies. And then each movie that came out was, like, one stranger than the other. And she's like, wait, we're going to see a movie where there's a talking raccoon and a talking tree. I'm like, you're going to love it. And then the next one is like, wait, we're going to go see a movie called Ant-Man. It's like, you're going to love it. So, like, getting her into these movies was an uphill battle. And Batman versus Superman, she's like, well, I don't want to see, like, two superheroes fight. I'm like, it's going to be great. And then 20 minutes into the movie, I, like, turned to her and I was like, this is going to be amazing. And then by the end, she's like, I hated it. So I agree. There's a lot to like about Batman versus Superman. Even the unedited version is still really good. So I'll give that praise. That's my number three. Number two is Man of Steel. I historically do not like the character of Superman. I've ever had conversations with anybody about superheroes, he's usually very poorly ranked for me. Not because he hasn't been depicted well, but because he's an unattainable figure. I like more grounded stories. And in all of the Superman movies before Man of Steel, it's always Superman that's pretending to be Clark Kent. Wherein in this one, it was almost like a role reversal. It was Clark Kent was pretending to be the Superman. He didn't want these powers.
Mm-hmm.
But he realized that it was that he was needed, that he could be something different. I loved the whole final sequence. Again, I know that like the collateral damage, you know, to Metropolis was in the billions, but still, it was a huge story. Like Batman or Superman Returns, what, Kevin Spacey? Like, so it's Superman against a giant rock again. Yeah. You know, once again, DC with the rocks as villains. This movie actually, I thought, was like redeemed Superman in my eyes. I was excited to see more of Henry Cavill's Superman in this universe. And so for me, like that says a lot because I've never actually walked out and been like, dude, Superman's awesome until I saw this movie. And I didn't see this movie in theaters. I saw this movie sitting at home because I was like, dude, because I was so anti-Superman. I'm like, dude, this movie's going to be stupid. And then everyone was like, dude, this is going to change Superman for you.
And they were don't know. How do you see that trailer and not be like, wow, that's a different Superman?
Because 5 years before that, we had Superman Returns. And I just had that stink of Superman still like in my brain that I was like, it looks fun, but who cares? It was my thought of the original Star Trek and then the 2009 reboot. When the 2009 reboot was coming out, we were still coming off of like Star Trek Nemesis. And it was like, who gives a shit that they're rebooting Star Trek? And it was like, well, it's J.J. Abrams. Okay. And then I'll never forget. I came walking out of theaters in 2009 and I said, this is going to be my favorite movie of this year. And it was.
Wow.
So, yeah, I need to be a little bit like less stink of old movies, you know, affecting my love of new movies.
So Man of Steel is your number two?
Well, yep. That makes Wonder Woman my number one.
Ah, okay.
The No Man's Land sequence, like there are times when you're watching the movie and you're watching a sequence in a movie where you emotionally get affected and you're just like, ooh, you're blown away. That No Man's Land sequence in that movie combined with like the score, that like Wonder Woman, oh my gosh. Like I remember just being like, this might be my favorite movie of the year. Like it was so good. And they characterized Wonder Woman perfectly in this movie. And it almost is kind of a fish out of water. Like she's just starting to discover the things that she's actually capable of doing. And then she goes into, you know, the world of man, something she's only like been read and told about. But like the sequences where she sees a baby and she's entranced by, oh my God, a baby, because they don't have babies on the island. Then she tries the ice cream and she's like, oh, you must be so proud. Like it's such good storytelling. It's such a polar opposite of the sequel. And I know that the Ares character, you know, the third act kind of has its issues.
A lot of people say that. I love the last fight. Like, I know a lot of times you'll hear the complaint, oh, it just turned a big CGI fight at the end. That's why I want to see the superhero movie. I want to see a giant CGI fight because they're freaking superheroes. They can't do what regular humans do. I want a big fight with a big villain. I want destruction. And they did a really good job in Wonder Woman giving you stakes in that last battle. Really well done, which made the sequel so disappointing.
So my defense in like the third act is, okay, she at this point, she's already established that nothing the Germans have can take her out. So they have to have this big god battle.
Yes.
Because at this point, she's established enough that like, you know, bullets don't hurt her, you know, punching her in the face doesn't hurt her. Like there's things that just aren't going to work. So you have to have Ares, the god of war, come in. Yeah, I think Wonder Woman, I can't speak highly enough. That is my favorite of the DCU movies.
I would say Wonder Woman would probably be number one for me, but the sequel undercut it by bringing Chris Pine's character back. So, like retrospectively, it lost a lot of its emotional punch right at the end.
It's a very good point. Well, folks, next up is our spoiler review of The Flash, and we are bringing in the outlaw John Rocha. Stay tuned. We're going to go to a commercial break.
This Valentine's Day, see the movie critics are calling one of the best romantic comedies of the 90s.
Yes.
The perfect date movie.
Really?
It's hysterical and charming.
Your father, is he a big man?
A romance that keeps you in stitches.
This is Chewie.
Chewie. Hi, Luke Skywalker. How are you?
Matthew Perry and Selma Hayek are the Lucy and Ricky for the 90s.
Todo lo que me has dicho mentiras. That means you're a liar and a coward.
Sounded so much prettier in Spanish.
Fools Rush In. Rated PG-13. Opens everywhere Valentine's Day.
If you think KFC just serves the Colonel's original recipe chicken, think again. There's our chunky chicken pot pie, freshly baked in a golden flaky crust, and the Colonel's crispy strips, freshly prepared all day. At KFC, our menu is getting so big, you might need a bigger table.
Everybody needs a little KFC.
Now fill your plate with the Colonel's crispy strips or a chunky chicken pot pie combo meal at a special price, just $3.79.
Welcome back, folks, and welcome to spoiler territory for The Flash. This week, we welcome in one of our favorites, the one and only, the outlaw, John Rocha.
Hello, everyone.
How you doing, John?
Good, good. Thank you. Thanks for having me on, man. Looking forward to it. I know this is a new venture, but with three dudes who I really like, so I'm very excited and honored to be on here. So thanks for having me.
Take note, Benny. Rocha said he likes me.
Duly noted.
We'll see after our review of The Flash. But we are going to go heavy into spoiler territory right off the bat. So if you have not seen The Flash movie, run out and see it and then come back and listen to the rest of this. But John, we just, the three of us just ranked our favorite DCEU movies. We ranked our top 12 from the bottom, or 13, okay. 14, whatever. I'm sorry, we're losing context at this point. But I am curious what your top three would be.
Now, are we including Zack Snyder's Justice League in this conversation?
Yes, we are. Of course.
We're excluding the Batman because that isn't part of the whole connected universe. Right.
So, so then my top three are Zack Snyder's Justice League, Man of Steel, and Wonder Woman. Those are the top three for me of the DCEU completely. For various reasons, I think I love Zach's 4-hour opus. I have watched it 6-7 times now, and sometimes I'll just have it on in the background while I'm working on stuff in the room in the office, just for shits and giggles. But Man of Steel, I love Man of Steel. I'll defend it with my dying breath. And fuck everyone who has an issue with the Kevin Costner scene when he sacrifices himself. You fucking don't get it. You fucking don't get it. Wonder Woman, I don't mean alienate your audience, but that's my opinion. And totally. Wonder Woman was just fantastic. And it grows even more so fantastic as the sequel was a debacle. Patty's now off Wonder Woman 3. And Gal Gadot has not proven that she can act as strongly as she did in that movie. And if you've seen the new trailer for her new movie, she is in it for about 15 seconds on camera. And everybody else is in for the 2 minutes and 15 seconds of the rest of the trailer. And that tells you that they don't have a lot of faith in her as an actress. So those three are just so incredible for so many different reasons, and great, great stuff. So, yeah.
Well, we're going to jump right in. Now, I also am curious, Rocha, The Flash is not trending well right now, box office wise. It's trending to have a $55 million weekend, which you have to assume that DC is like, dude, what happened? So we all had our thoughts as to our reasonings why we think that The Flash is tanking this weekend. And not tanking, but certainly not putting up the gangbusters numbers that you would have thought a movie like this would have put up. So your thoughts on what's going on with The Flash?
I think there are a lot of factors in this, but I do want to start off positively in that the fact that Andy Muschietti finished this film and put it out is a miracle within itself. I mean, remember, 45 different directors were involved in this. He had to survive three different regimes. So as we see on that Hollywood Reporter article, they were changing the ending with each regime. So trying to make that work with his overall film, he got a wonderful performance from Ezra Miller. It was great to see Keaton back. No one ever thought that was ever happening again. And I thought Sasha Calle was fantastic in the film. So there are a lot of positives to take from the film. And I enjoyed the story for the most part. But there is just too much drama, too much of a debacle. There was too much hype for the film coming out of CinemaCon, and I think people were let down by that. We're a much more cynical society now, and we're much more cynical as moviegoers about superhero movies. So if you tell us this is the greatest superhero movie of all time, we are going to sit back with our arms folded, go and prove it. And I don't think the film 100% did that. And I think word of mouth eventually from fans, normal fans who'd gone to see stuff like this, killed it. And I think it's absolutely going to sink like a stone after this weekend. And this is going to look real bad on Zaslav, because Zaslav withstood all the criticism of Ezra Miller to put this thing out because he thought it was going to be a hit. And it does not look like it's trending towards hit in any way, shape, or form. And I saw someone say, like, oh, I've never seen a more concerted campaign to destroy a film. I'm like, we just had Little Mermaid, man. That was a fucking, concerted campaign with racist guys and people review bombing that film because the mermaid happened to be black, you know? So the Flash situation is a law of diminishing returns, and people just didn't feel like it was a film that lived up to the hype in the end. Plus all the drama behind the scenes. I just think people are done with DC until James Gunn launches Superman Legacy.
Now, do you think that James Gunn announcing when he did that this iteration of the DCU is going to be gone, do you think there is some people that are going like, well, I'll just watch this on video because it's not going to matter given the continuity of like the DCU. It's all going to end here shortly and Blue Beetle's going to be the only one coming back.
Yeah, that was a fight that Jeff and I had on the hot mic, one of many that we have on that show. And because I said to Jeff that I didn't give a shit about Shazam, and I don't give a shit about Aquaman 2. By the way, can we cuss on air? Are we in trouble?
Of course. Cuss it out.
But the situation for me is I was like, people don't care about something that is dying. They don't want to waste their time. I don't watch shows that ended after the first season if I haven't watched the first season already. I've never seen Freaks and Geeks because I just don't, it never kept going. So I didn't feel the need to go back and watch it, even though I give Sam Levine a lot of shit for that show. overall, though, to me, that's the way it looked. And I think a lot of people feel this way because there are so much demands on our time with so many TV shows, so many streaming services, so many movies, so many things. Plus, people are working more than they ever did before to try to make up the money and pay rent and all these things. So if you want to demand their buck, they got to feel that it's worth it. And I think a majority of people don't want to waste their time going to see something that isn't actually going to lead to anything if you know that ahead of time. It's different if you started watching it and you didn't know, right? You'd go and see it. But the fact that people know ahead of time that this Flash may not continue, this Batman may not continue, this may not mean anything. And I think this is Aquaman 2, they should just shutter that and never release it.
Well, but here's the thing, John.
Yeah.
Aquaman was a $1 billion earner.
It was.
This is the first Flash film.
Sure.
And so at least with Aquaman, you have that history of a huge global box office. So you got to release that movie because you know they spent like probably $250 million on it.
Yeah. And How did Wonder Woman 2 and that made what? $785 million.
Wonder Woman 2 was bad. I think it's one of the worst.
That's what I'm getting.
DCU films. But I think James Wan hopefully is going to not follow in the footsteps of Patty Jenkins and actually deliver another fun Aquaman film. But how much do you think the actual general public, like just the general public, middle America, how much do they really care about the fact the DC is going to be rebooted and restarted? Or do you think a lot of people are just like, I want to go see a good superhero movie and The Flash looks like it could be that?
Yeah, I mean, I think people are more aware of things than people give credit for, especially if you're into superhero movies, right? I mean, you can argue that middle America doesn't really go see superhero movies overall unless it's an anomaly like Black Panther or something where it cuts across the swath of generations and people understand that it's a good movie and they want, like Spider-Man No Way Home. Everybody grew up liking Spider-Man, right? The idea to bring back all the Spider-Man into one, and all the reviews were so positive about it. I think that's the reason it did so well. And by the way, right in the still in the heat of COVID, people were laying on top of each other in theaters just to see Spider-Man No Way Home. So true. I think there's a pop culture zeitgeist that I think a lot of critics and a lot of box office people don't understand because they're so about numbers. There's a universal energy, in my opinion, when it comes to these kinds of things, and people get swept up in it. And I think The Flash, because of all the drama and all the stuff, people may not know Ezra Miller. They may not know about the drama full on, but there's just something about it overall that I don't think appealed to it. And let me add something else that really might hurt all of us and some of you listening too. I have my co-host on the Cinephile, Steve Morris. He showed 1989's Batman to his 11-year-old son and 15-year-old sister of his son, and they laughed at the movie. So generations behind us might not be revering 1989 and the way we do. And they're the ones who are going to be spending the money or getting their dads or moms to take them to the theater multiple times. So that could be a part of this too, that we love Michael Keaton because we're the old nerds.
Yeah.
That the young nerds were all that jazzed to see Michael Keaton in the film as well.
I agree.
I would like to throw one question out here for Roka before we get into the Flash thing. So with the announcement that they're going to carry the Blue Beetle character forward, right?
Yeah.
Coming on the heels of this movie just bottoming out.
Yeah.
And I just get a feeling that Blue Beetle is just going to get smashed at the box office if they release it. Do you think that that's a good way to start off James Gunn's regime with something that's almost guaranteed not to be successful?
It's a good question, and I know a lot of people are asking this now, Loma. So, I mean, my opinion, I'm looking at it, and I'm sorry, Harold Ramis. I'm looking at it, and I'm just concerned myself, too, because as a Latino who has constantly talked about representation and getting our own lead, being a lead in our own films and getting an opportunity like this, it's going to be interesting to see how Blue Beetle does. Because if James Gunn says it's the beginning or the kind of soft opening of his universe, then I think people will be more willing to give it a chance. Because if he's carrying over and it's going to be what is going to be a part of the universe, I think that inspires people to give it a chance. And we'll see if it's a good movie, then I think it will have legs and people will go see it. If it has the kind of humor that we're seeing teased in the trailer, I think that's really going to work, you know. Plus, people can't say, oh, they recast Ted Kord with a Latino guy. This is a different guy, like Miles Morales, right? Like Across the Spider-Verse, people love Across the Spider-Verse and spending on it because it's a damn good movie. So I say this, if it's a good movie and the criticisms are positive, I think he's got a real good shot of not falling into this. But Aquaman 2 is dead in the water. I'm telling you, it is dead in the water. But Blue Beetle has more of a chance to do better than Aquaman 2. And because I'm already hearing from some of the social media posts of people that I know and some people who've seen early screenings that it is terrible, like absolutely terrible. So, and I thought the first one was horrible. So seeing a second one that's terrible, I don't think.
Yep.
Well, they just got to kill it. People don't want to go. They just got to kill it. But Blue Beetle, I think, has a chance.
I think if you're DC Studios, or especially James Gunn, if you had any of this DCU characters cameoing in Blue Beetle, you need to cut those scenes immediately.
Yes, 100%. 100%. Yep.
I think if you're going to throw any type of cameos into that movie, it's, again, it won't have the legs to be able to sustain itself in the new DC universe.
Yeah,
I think you need to cut any cameos, even if they were great, funny cameos. Just like the George Lopez like joke where he's calling Batman a fascist in the preview. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Like that's fine, because then you could just know that Batman exists in this universe.
Right.
You don't have to have a Batman show up. So I'm rooting for Blue Beetle actively. I love the character of Blue Beetle as a nerd. And I think it's perfect. It's kind of like an Iron Man almost with the armor that can take so many different shapes for the DC universe. So I'm really rooting for this movie. Yeah. I hope it pays off.
And just to add one more thing, I also think because it's a young actor who is known to the Karate Kid, people who enjoy that show, Zolo Maradueña radiates a kind of topical youth that I think younger moviegoers might be more inclined to go see and give a chance to. So you might be right. I'm going to say might actually get smashed, but I think it has a better chance than people are initially giving it, since Gunn says he's going to continue into his universe.
Let's jump right in to our spoiler review. What we liked, what we loved, what we hated about The Flash. Roka, you're our guest. Kick us off, man. What worked for you in this movie?
Well, as I said earlier, I thought Muschietti's direction was really good in the film. I thought the story was touching. I thought Ezra Miller did an incredible job playing both characters and making them distinctly, uniquely different people. As an actor, I watch for that, and I'm watching for those little nuances and those beats and those moments. And they conveyed a older Barry and a younger Barry so effectively, and their chemistry back and forth worked so well. You bought into it that you forgot that it was one actor playing both roles. I thought Michael Keaton was fantastic coming back as Batman. Do I think that it 100% worked in terms of his coming back? I know we'll get to the criticisms of that, I imagine, in our discussion, but I'm going to start with the positives. Again, Sasha Calle, I thought she was great as Supergirl. Mm-hmm. Loved the energy, loved the ferocity, loved the tenderness and the vulnerability, but also a little bit of the anger. I love that. I would have loved more with her and more time with her. The Zod stuff did not work for me. I'm a huge Man of Steel fan. If I haven't seen Man of Steel, that final act falls apart big time because I don't know the threat of Zod other than he wants to kill billions of people. I think you could have used the time to have Sasha Calle, Supergirl, explain Zod's what he's done before, where he's been. And I know we did get a couple of lines, but I think there could have been a lot of time where you spent getting to know who Zod is, building up the fear of Zod and what Zod symbolizes and all of that. And I think this, I know the CGI, I think a lot of people had issues with CGI. I didn't mind it so much, but I know that a lot of people did. I understood what Muschietti was doing there with the whole warped stuff in the Flash bubble point universe or whatever he was doing with the time stuff. And I thought the ending was really sweet with him and his mom in the grocery store and that stuff there that I thought worked. So those are the things that worked for me overall. And the things that didn't work for me, as I said, the third act, having Batman come back, but not having time to like have him go on the journey of putting on the cowl again, because he said, I'm retired, the Gotham is great. What brings him out of this other than just, hey, help me? Like, there must have been people who came to Bruce Wayne, or must have been people who needed Bruce Wayne or whatever, or knew about Batman. I just would have liked a little bit more of a journey, because within 2 minutes, he's already back on board, putting on the cowl, shaving his face. Like, I just would have liked more going on here with that situation. And so it didn't 100% work for me, even though I thought Keaton was great in the role. So those are just like my general overall thoughts for the film.
Benny, I'm going to toss it over to you, pal. What did you like about this movie? First impressions?
Overall, like, had a really good time with the movie. Was, you know, energized walking out of the theater. Like, hey, that was a good time, man. Wouldn't mind watching that again. But what's the weirdest thing about this movie is everything that I absolutely loved is also the exact same thing that I did not like about the movie. First off, Rocha is right. Sasha, the young lady that plays Supergirl,
yeah,
outstanding, crushed that. Like, I walked out, like, first thing, man, I wish I got a whole Supergirl movie with her. But then also the biggest gripe that I had is they gave her no character development when she was just like jumping right out of the screen at you. Like, her entire character development was, I'm a Kryptonian. I don't care about, you know, humanity. She flies. She looks at God and is like, look, that guy's wearing a fucking hat. Fuck him. I'm going over to the humans. And that kind of drove me insane because, you know, she was really jumping out of the screen. And then after that, like, the pacing of the movie was really good. It's a 2-hour and 20 minute movie. And it always felt like it was moving, like it was crisp. But that being said, a lot of times, like, I felt there were just like huge pieces of the movie missing, like where Roka's talking about Michael Keaton's journey back to the movie, Supergirl's character development. So, you know, it seems like there was a lot of more weird interactions with the roommates. It just, there was the romance with Iris went from like nothing to 90 in two scenes. It just felt like this was a 5-hour movie and they cut it down to 2 hours, but it was a really good pace 2 hours, but I want the rest of the movie. And so those were my initial thoughts going in. But that being said, I really hope that they bring this young lady on as Supergirl in James Gunn's universe. I would really like to see that quite a bit. And yeah, that's pretty much what I have to say about it. And the end CGI, like, I didn't mind it. Like, it was fine. But I think if you're going to pull the old Superman from the shorts in the 50s, that's great. But if you're going to want them to work in the movie, you can't just be showing actual reels from the old Superman show in the 50s. Like, I used to watch that on Nick at Night when I was really little, and they were just showing clips. Like, they didn't, like, you know, do the background remover that you can do on Wondershare. Like, they put no time in that bad boy.
Yeah, all right. I guess I'll jump here and give my thoughts. So I was lucky enough to see this movie twice, and I'm really glad I did, because the nostalgia goggles were strong in that first viewing. Seeing Michael Keaton back as Batman was worth the ticket, you know, to admission alone. And I did feel like I tweeted out after I saw the film the first time that this is a really fun summer film. Grab some popcorn, grab some soda, go have a good time. And I still stand by that. But I will say, on the second viewing, some of the tonal shifts in the movie didn't work for me as well. There's that times where this movie is so goofy and kind of over the top in its humor. And then a couple scenes later, you have that scene in with his mom in the grocery store, which is really touching. And I'm not comparing this movie to Thor, Love and Thunder, but that movie did some of this to a much more extreme degree, in my opinion. I thought Thor, Love and Thunder was undercut by the comedy. Anytime I started to feel anything for like Jane or, you know, Gore the God, the humor would jump up and spike up to such a ridiculous level that it undercut the dramatic scenes. This movie doesn't do it anywhere near as bad as Thor and Love and Thunder, but I do feel like the tonal shift at times was like, am I watching a Saturday morning cartoon? Or am I watching like a Zack Snyder drama right now? Because it just really jumped around a lot. The CGI, I think, in the beginning is actually pretty bad. I think a lot of people complain the CGI. I could forgive the Speed Force CGI because it sounds like that was a creative choice. Yeah. It's like, okay, you're creating these wax looking CGI figures because he's not really in reality. But the babies looked really bad. It kind of reminded me of Son of the Mask. Remember? Yeah. I was like, wow, these CGI babies do not look good. And I have this movie's been on the shelf for how many years?
Yeah, quite a while.
Did they just decide we're not going to touch up the CGI? If you have this movie on a shelf, keep this is a flagship film for the DCEU, like towards the end of the Zack Snyder. Why not have all those effects in the top quality? Because you had the time to do it. Maybe WB was just like, we're not putting more money into this because we don't know what we're doing with the DCEU. So yeah, man, I agree with what Roka said. I think Ezra Miller did a really good job playing two very different characters at different ages, and they really played off each other well. And there were times where I could tell there was a CGI face, but Ezra Miller really does sell that he's playing two different characters, and they played off each other really well. After the Michael Keaton goggles were removed of nostalgia, like Roka said, he kind of just jumps into this thing without really much of a backstory or motivation. And I felt that more in the second time, because the first time I'm just so happy to see Michael Keaton. I don't care.
Yeah.
So the second time, a lot of these things became pretty clear that this is a pretty good movie. It's not a great comic book movie. It's a pretty good, fun comic book movie. And I think the expectations, unfortunately, going into this movie by James Gunn, Warner Brothers, just the word of mouth, was this thing was going to be one of the all-time best comic book movies. And unfortunately, it didn't really come close to that for me. I do agree Sacha Cawley is great, but as much as I loved her, she was so wasted in this movie. Mm-hmm. Give her way more to do. Put her in this movie and give her action. Like, she's just flying around and doing what the story needs her to do instead of having the actual arc or actual character pieces. So I love her. I thought she was great, but I do feel like the film in some ways wasted her. And Michael Keaton is awesome. I mean, he's awesome as Batman. He's an awesome actor. Let me ask you this, you guys. He's not the Michael Keaton from Batman Returns and Batman 89, because we're in an alternate universe where he's mixed in with this timeline. So in a way, he is that Batman, but he's not. He's a version of the Batman that we grew up with. He is not the Burton. Am I correct in that thinking?
I don't know that they ever established that clearly.
Yeah.
That it's, you know, because they don't say like, going back to this Batman, but not the Batman you know of. This is a different Batman. So
yeah,
they don't establish that clearly in the movie. So I think you're left to your own devices to decide if this is the Batman of Tim Burton's universe, because remember, he has never heard of Superman.
Correct.
In that universe, which could make sense because there was no Superman in Tim Burton's. There's not even an allusion to Superman, I think, in those first two Tim Burton films, or even the Schumacher films. So I don't think it isn't that Batman, but I can see you making a case that it is not that Batman. So it, yeah. it's very possible, but they left it wide open for you to decide.
It's like the spaghetti. Like all these timelines are crossed up, and there's a version of that Batman in this universe, but it's not. We are not in the Tim Burton universe, is what I'm saying. Because this did not look like Batman Returns. This looked like the Zack Snyder and City of Gotham and whatever. So.
That's a good point.
This is the spaghetti verse. Okay. Yeah, that's established. Yeah. There's so much freaking spaghetti in this movie. Yeah.
This may be like a really weird reference, but you guys know the character Jonah Hex.
Yeah.
Of course.
Sure.
So there's a point in like the old like Jonah Hex where he's riding along with all of these time traveling superheroes. He's like, yeah, this happened to me before. And Michael Keaton, we like the spaghetti. He's sort of like hinting, like, yeah, I've been swapped around universes before, you know?
Yeah.
So I think he was sort of hinting that this is not his first rodeo with time travel.
Interesting. All right, Moose, I'm curious to hear your thoughts. Oh, I think we lost Moose. So I will continue. Okay. Moose has been going, he had some rough internet. He's in Canada. Come on, Canada, get your internet together. I love that his name's Moose and he's in Canada. It's just great symmetry. All right, so let's talk a little bit more about, for me, the CGI. Let's just touch on that real quick because it is a very big hot topic. Like I said, I thought at times it did look bad, especially in the beginning with the babies. I can forgive it sometimes towards the end because, again, this is a big summer CGI blockbuster. We want to see superheroes punching planes. We want to see explosions. Outside of the Speed Force, did the CGI distract you at all during this? Let's start with Benny. Benny, did it distract you a lot or a little?
I thought the scene with the babies was ridiculous. But I don't know that that was necessarily the CGI, just like the choices they made in that scene with the burrito and putting a baby in a microwave. You could have worked on that CGI for 5 years and that scene was not going to get any better. It's just a bad scene. Now, towards the end, the only thing I would say that was jarring to me in the whole movie is when they were giving us the fireworks of cameos there at the end and the tricksing world. Like you could tell that those had not been worked on, that they were not finished. Like the Nicolas Cage one looked really bad. I mean, you could have just paid Nicolas Cage to show up and put on a suit. And they were literally just showing film clips from, you know, an 80-year-old TV show. So there was no polish on that. For me, like at the end of it, that was a little jarring. Like I actually looked at it like they really did not work on that at all. And I'm not an aficionado of effects and things like that. I like low-budget movies. It's not something that bothers me. But it did stand out compared to everything else. With the Speed Force, when they would look outside the bubble, like when Flash actually wasn't pushing his head through and looking into a scene, I thought it looked very jumbled, even if it wasn't an aesthetic choice. So I think if you weren't familiar with the Speed Force or what was actually happening when he was running in there, I think it would be rather confusing. But I mean, I didn't think it was terrible compared to other things that you would see in a skybeam laden superhero universe.
What about you, Rugged? Did it distract you at all? Did it take away from the film?
I don't know if other people have said this, so I don't want to take any kind of credit for anything. But in my opinion, I didn't have an issue with the CGI at the beginning because you're putting babies in danger. And I think you want to not make that look as realistic as possible. All right.
Okay.
I mean, because it's trauma for a lot of, I'm sure it's trauma for a lot of men and women who have maybe lost babies or miscarried or whatever. You got to be sensitive to that situation. And I think seeing babies that looked really like babies and very realistically like babies, especially if you're tossing one into a microwave that just cooked up a burrito. I just think in those moments, like, it's supposed to be funny, fantastical, and weird, which if you've read the Flash comic books, that is certainly an element of the Flash comic books. So for me, and I see other people had issues with it. I'm not going to say that you shouldn't feel that way. Just for me, it didn't bother me because it felt very much like a Flash thing. And I liked that they didn't make the babies too realistic because it was all played for humor. So to me, that's what they were going for, is the funniness of it. Of babies and having the woman scream as the kind of button on top of that whole human or that whole scene, rather, I thought was very funny. So to me, the whole scene played that well, and the CGI was fine. I mean, the dog CGI was funny. Like all of it worked, because it was trying to be fantastical and not realistic, I think on purpose, in my opinion. Now, I may be wrong. Maybe Andy was trying to make it realistic. I don't know. But to me, that's what I got. That's why I didn't bother. And I've seen it twice too, JT. Yeah. That's why it didn't bother me.
So let me ask you this, John. Do you feel like the tone of that like almost feels like a Looney Tunes cartoon at times?
Yeah.
Did that clash with the more serious tone at times that this movie would take? Or did you feel like the balance was okay?
No, I did think the balance was okay because it's the Flash. And that, and if you re- as I said, if you read the comic books, Flash has this kind of balance between goofiness and seriousness. People are conditioned a little bit with the CW's Flash. And sometimes, and the CW Flash didn't lean into too much of the goofiness and humor that you see in some of the Flash comic books. But here's the thing that may be in a lot of people's corners who had issues with the tones is if this is based on Flashpoint, there's hardly any goofy humor in Flashpoint. It's a good pretty point. Brutal story that they tell. I mean, Wonder Woman is cutting heads off and shit. It's crazy at Flashpoint. It's a great, great read. So in that way, it may be skewed with or maybe mess with people's expectations. But it fit for me for what the Flash they were trying to tell. And remember, Ezra's been playing the Flash like this since they first appeared as the Flash, right? There's always been the extra jokes, the goofy humor. I mean, he showed up with they showed up with Momoa at the end of Peacemaker. And then we get that final scene with them and Momoa, with Momoa being drunk as Aquaman and stuff. Yeah. So the humor here is, I think, a huge element of the Flash. And so to me, the tonal shifts worked. But I will tell you something that didn't work. And that is I didn't 100% dial into the relationship between him and his mom. I wanted more. Oh. Yeah, I wanted more time. She's painted as this fantastical, you know, utopian idea of what a mother would be. And I would have liked to have seen a little more here of their interactions and their connections, of her, you know, maybe having some moments where she's kind of calling him out or kind of calling him on the carpet. But everything he did was so amazing. Everything he did was so loving to her, right? Even when Gallagher Livingston is giving him
Livingston
shit. Yeah. about how he's put on weight or how he looks more. Mm-hmm. She's like, why would you say that about, you know? And again, look, I grew up, I have a Latino mom. Of course, they defend us with the last breath. I totally get it. But I think there could have been more dimension to that relationship so that when we have that moment in the grocery store at the end, we'd have really felt that, you know? And it didn't 100% do that in the movie.
This movie had did a really interesting thing where we never got the origin story of the Flash. Mm-hmm. He just kind of appears in Zack Snyder's films and he's right. in the Justice League. By going back in the past and meeting the old, you know, Barry, they kind of retroactively gave us a origin story for this character. But I agree with you. The mother is very much in a dreamlike sense. Like she's perfect. You know, yeah. I agree. If you would have given us a little bit something, some sort of conflict, sometimes some of those best stories are like you just had an argument with your mother, and then something tragic happens, and you live with that guilt,
yes,
or you weren't able to say something to her. Like that would have been a more interesting angle to this whole thing.
Also, who killed her? We don't fucking know who killed her. Is this like some random thing?
Well, no, his dad killed her. I'm telling you. He's like a stabber, man.
Ron Livingston replacing Billy Crudup. I thought he did a pretty good job.
Yeah.
But I am curious, watch this film. Like, could we just had like, imagine we just had an origin Flash film, like a traditional origin film. He's not Spider-Man. He's not Batman. The Flash is not as well known in the public conscious as like, those people, everybody knows how Batman's parents died. Everybody knows how Superman got sent to Earth. The Flash is not I would argue he's not a grade A level superhero. He's one of the top ones for sure, but his story is not as well known, I think, in the lexicon of just, you know, pop culture. It's a little bit more in the geeky side. So do you feel like they made a mistake by not just having a original Flash origin film? Do you think that would have helped give his parents maybe a little bit more, you know, a little bit more depth, a little more character study, would have done more to make us more in love with this character? Like, do you feel like this backwards way of doing it was a mistake from the beginning? I'll go to you, Benny. I'll start with you.
I would say, personally, the only thing, I think this relationship would have worked if they had spent a little time explaining, like, Flash is someone that had both of his parents taken away at age 9. So he views them through this like idealistic lens of perfection. And so I don't think it's wrong to have the parents portrayed that way through his eyes, but I think they needed to do something to let us know, like with the other Barry, to have the relationship with the mom or the dad be conflicted or argumentative. So we understand that these memories are through this Barry's eyes. And then another thing is, I think they really should have had the dad kill the mom at the end. Cause like, if you're talking about a way to like just hammer that home, like Barry's the going to have to bear this for all humanity, making him lose both of them on the same day twice again, that would have been the ballsy way to go.
Wow. Interesting. Yeah. Different timelines, different jumping around. You know, it's so funny, Roka, when you said the relationship you didn't really buy, I thought you were going to say Barry and Iris, because I felt very little chemistry.
Yeah, I know. I agree. There was more chemistry in the non-spoken back and forth with them in Zack Snyder's Justice League than there was in this movie, 100%. And so many people were like, Kiersey Clemons, she got done wrong by being cut out of the movie. But if this was what the relationship and the chemistry we were going to get, and granted, it's a different director, but if this is the chemistry we're going to get, I don't think it's a bad thing she was cut out, because I agree with you. There's no chemistry or spark at all. Yeah.
I agree. Yeah, it felt painful. Those scenes between him and her felt like, wow, what is happening here right now? Like,
yeah,
I don't know if it's just, again, they just don't have chemistry. If it was a direction, I don't know what it was, but I felt nothing at the beginning. I felt nothing at the end of that movie for those characters. And I almost wished he kind of took her out of the movie. I don't think it would have hurt the film. It might have helped it if you just took her out completely. Yeah. Benny, did that relationship work for you at all, or are you on the same page with us?
It was a throwaway. I don't think it added anything. I don't know that it necessarily detracted, but it certainly didn't add anything. Now, Rogue, you say you watch the Zack Snyder Justice League quite a bit. So one thing I had a question for, because I've not watched it in a fair bit.
Yeah.
To me, just in through my lens, I feel like the main Barry Allen in this has a very different tone than he did in the Justice League movies.
Yes.
I felt like in those movies, he was a socially awkward, tormented geek. And in this movie, I feel like Ezra Miller is actively playing someone with Asperger's disorder.
Oh.
And he's like trying to do that. So like he seems to be very socially stunted in this movie as compared to the other one. And I just didn't know if I'm not remembering that right. Did you see a shift in his portrayal from the main Barry Allen?
I did see a shift in his portrayal. Do you mean in the second Barry, or do you mean the main Barry that we're following through the whole movie?
The main Barry, okay. The linear one from the Justice League.
To me, I think he's old. Or they're all, well, I could say the character. He's older, the character is, than... Mm-hmm. They were in like Zack Snyder's Justice League or in even the Justice League or whatever. Like, he's older, and clearly he's been cleaning up the Justice League's messes or Batman's messes for a while. So that ages you. You get more experience. You naturally become more confident in what you're doing. So you sense that this was an awkward kid in those other movies, but here he is much more, he's grown up a little bit. So he's much more aware. But you still have the moments, like when he grabs the lasso and says, sex, I think about sex. So you have those moments where the awkward kid still comes out, certainly dealing with Iris. You have those moments, but I think he's much – because he's driving the narrative here. He is trying to school the young Barry about what's happening. He forces the young Barry to get the powers. He's the guy that realizes they can't keep repeating things over and over again because it's just going to lead to death. So he is the more intelligent, more understanding, more mature person in the movie. So of the two Flashes. So to me, I think that's why they made the adjustment, because he had to drive the narrative of the film. And it works because he's older. But I don't know if I can speak to the Asperger stuff, but if you see that, I can totally understand that and maybe look for that the next time I watch it.
So we mentioned earlier that Aquaman's coming out. We got Blue Beetle, which is kind of its own thing in some ways. So in a lot of ways, this is the end of Zack Snyder's DCEU. This was probably the last time we're going to see Ben Affleck as Batman. The jury's out on Wonder Woman. Yeah. So let me ask you this. What do you think this was? How do you think this movie did for the last possible time of seeing Ben Affleck as Batman? And maybe Wonder Woman. Like, do you think these were a final good goodbye for maybe these characters?
Oh yeah, I don't think Wonder Woman's coming back as Gal Gadot. Oh, Gal Gadot's Wonder Woman coming back unless they do a multiverse thing again, which I really think they're going to walk away from now. Mm-hmm. But the Batman Ben Affleck, that was a really good 5-10 minutes we got with him. The action sequences were great with him. The conversation with Barry, there was a gauntness to Ben Affleck that I've never seen in anything he's ever done. And there was an age on him that I've never seen him do. And I was like, this is a goddamn interesting Bruce Wayne and Batman. This is the guy that lost Robin. This is the guy that fought Superman or was, you know, there was so much more that you could play with. So if this is the last time that he's Batman, it's a true loss for us, because I still think his warehouse fight sequence is the best sequence in the DCU of anything. And losing him after such a wonderful performance, and him even saying, I finally figured out how to play this character, I think would be a real shame. I think James Gunn should find a way to make that happen. And he directs his own Batman movie as it was supposed to be years ago. I think that would be a lot of fun to see Ben do like one Batman movie.
It is crazy that he has played Batman several times, and yet he had never really had his own Batman
film. Yeah, I know.
Like, that goes to show you the DCU didn't know what the hell they were doing and were drunk when they brought this whole thing together. Because how do you have Ben Affleck, one of the biggest stars in Hollywood, and you never, I mean, Batman v Superman was a two-hander, and I would say it probably leans more towards Batman.
Yes,
it does. At the end of the day, you never really got a true Batman movie. Yeah. Benny, what's your thoughts on Ben Affleck's Batman, and do you think this was a good send-off for him?
I didn't think it was, I think it was a fine addition to what the DCEU was. I didn't feel a sense of closure in these like 2 5-minute scenes, but I thought it was fine, their legacy is what their legacy is going to be. I think James Gunn can't wait to say, fuck all you all, I'm doing my own thing. You know, I just don't think he can do it yet. I think he's got a calendar and he's marking off days to Aquaman 2 comes out and he can be peace out, boys.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, what about, so let's talk about some of the other cameos in this film. So Wonder Woman shows up for about, this was about equal to her Shazam cameo. It felt unnecessary. It felt like we just got thrown in there because she's Wonder Woman. But let's talk about the last one, George Clooney. What are they doing here? Are we going to have another George Clooney Batman scene after this?
There have been a lot of rumors that he was going to be the Batman in the Batman Brave and the Bold. There have been a lot of rumors. Grace Randolph has been tweeting about this possibility for quite some time.
Interesting.
And a lot of people have said bullshit, bullshit, bullshit. And here is George Clooney in this movie. By the way, he was fantastic in that recent film with Julia Roberts. It reminded me that we have been missing this man on screen for a long time. He, even in this sequence, he has such a ease and confidence and demeanor. And you can see him being a Batman for the Batman Brave and the Bold. And look, who is directing Batman the Brave and the Bold? Andy Muschietti. I mean, he brings Clooney into this. There's a very real, but he's essentially set up the canon now that in Ezra Miller's or in this Barry Allen's universe now, it is no longer Ben Affleck who is Batman. It is George Clooney. That has been established now.
Yeah.
So if we go Brave and the Bold, making Clooney your Batman is not out of the realm of possibility. And I think some people might maybe come around on it to see what he can do as the Batman getting another chance. Because we're all about rebirths and second chances. Hayden Christensen coming back to play Vader. Nobody thought that was going to happen. So having Clooney come back to maybe do a better job as Batman, I think would be real interesting. So I liked seeing him. I thought it was a nice way. Both times I saw it, the audience was like, oh, shit. So,
yeah.
That tells you that people are in tune with that possibility for sure.
It got a big pop. How about you, Benny? Did you enjoy this George Clooney cameo? Do you think he actually has a chance of maybe being a Batman again?
I was honestly a little disappointed it wasn't Christian Bale.
Oh, it wasn't, man.
Christian Bale.
No way he was coming back unless it was a way bigger role, man. No way.
I was disappointed it wasn't Christian Bale. I would say it depends on the tone that they are going to set in James Gunn's universe. Mm. If there's going to be any kind of dark and grit to it, no. Because I don't think people are ever going to let George Clooney escape his turn as Batman in that role. Because I don't think you can see him being that kind of happy Bruce Wayne, even like he was in that one scene, and then just killing 10 guys. Hmm. You know, I just don't think that that transition is going to click in people's minds. But if we see, like, when the Superman comes out, if it is a much brighter, happier universe, like a not even as dark as Guardians of the Galaxy, almost like a PG-13 kid-friendly superhero universe. Yeah. Yes, it can happen. But if they're going to want to have dark tones at all in this universe, I think they got to stay away from it. I think they got to start fresh with new people, unless they're doing a Batman Beyond and, you know, they're going with someone else as the younger Batman. But
I want to talk a little bit about the kind of the very final, not action sequence, but the moment where Barry realizes that he has caused kind of everything that has happened in this universe, the bending of time. I thought it was really cool seeing the younger Barry continually getting stabbed with these like Kryptonian weapons,
and
slowly but surely kind of becoming a monster to the point where you got these three Barrys. You got the young Barry, the Barry who's been through time for God knows how long, and is basically has gone mad and became this, like, you know, monster, really. I thought that was a really cool angle. And to have a redemption moment when Barry sacrifices himself to save, you know, the Barry that we all know from the Zack Snyder Justice League. How did that hold? I think some people on the internet have seen that that is a little bit messy for them. It's a little bit all over the place. Right. You're also in that CGI bubble. That whole sequence of events, and let's take away the, all the universes popping in with Nicolas Cage. Let's kind of put that to the side. How about just that dramatic moment of these three Barrys in the Time Force? Did that work for you? Let's start with you, Rocco.
It's a good question. I think my issue with that whole ending conversation is there's no comeuppance for Barry. Barry started this whole thing. The other Barry is right. You came into my universe. You did this to me. And yes, I made you do this to me. That's where the logic gets confusing, because you're just like, well, the loop must start somewhere. I get that a loop exists, but the loop must start somewhere. So did the loop begin when Barry decided to go back in time, or did the loop begin in the future with this version of the Flash going back to motivate that other Barry run and create this Speed Force and essentially go back in time?
It's like Terminator. How did John Connor come to be if he never went back in the time?
Exactly. So it's a bit muddy, the logic here, when you get to this whole back and forth. But I liked the back and forth. I just would have liked a little more comeuppance for Barry for having, in essence, initiated all of this. They kind of let him off the hook a little bit. And maybe your point there, Benny, that he couldn't get his dad off. If he couldn't have gotten his dad off, that could have been a nice little comeuppance for the whole situation. And because the whole point of what she said to him, his mom, is exactly what he says to the other Barry. We have to kind of accept things and let go and move on, and we can't always solve. There's not a solution to everything, right? So him accepting that his father is in jail and that he's doing his best efforts, but it might not always work out for him, or might not work out for him, that still adds that angst to the story of Barry. By solving it, you're in essence going, well, everything's fine now, Barry, you're good to go. And I think this is where there's a bit muddiness. And I know it's good that he came to terms with the death of his mom. That's cool, and I think that's awesome. But I also think there's no real comeuppance for him having, in essence, sent another Barry into a wormhole where his entire world is killed by Zod. You know, so there's more here that I think they could have haggled out, I guess, in conversation.
And before I get to Benny, he made all this happen by putting one can of tomatoes in his mom's cart. And then he goes and moves all those cans to the top shelf. Mm. So his dad is able to be seen on the video camera. So by doing that, is that how we got George Clooney Batman? Like, what?
Yes.
Moving a can from one shelf to the other. How did that not just reset everything? It's kind of muddy when it comes down to the whole timeline thing. But so Benny, did that whole last sequence, that last confrontation between the three Barrys, how did that work for you?
When I was not a big fan of the character design of the reverse Flash, he looked like a big ball of aluminum foil someone had crumpled up.
A little bit like a Power Ranger villain.
Yeah. I think it goes back to something you saw several times in the movie, like with Supergirl's lack of character development, is that you had this Barry who's been stuck in this time loop for 2 billion years, and then the other Barry is just like, yeah, let's not do that. You know, there's no logic why he's able to get out of this loop now. There's nothing that's changed if he's been in this loop for 1 billion years. Why suddenly he's just like, nah, I'm good now, let's go. And really, I think one thing is Barry is not at fault. This is his mom's fault for not using fresh tomatoes. This is all on her.
Canned tomatoes. What are you thinking? Yes,
that's right.
Did I see some people complaining online about the needle drops? Andy Muschietti definitely used them in It too. Yeah. It is something that he kind of has a tendency to do. Did they take you guys out of the movie at all? Like Roka, did any of those music drops? There, I think there might have been one or two too many, but did it bother you?
What did we just see recently? Too many needle drops in the first
Fast X?
Transformers. Too many. Get it? You get it? I get 90s hip hop. Do you get it? Like in the first 30, 45 minutes, there was way too many needle drops to prove that someone could put together a 90s rap mix. Okay. It was too much. In here, though, I didn't necessarily mind it. Like when he's running, especially that needle drop when the second Barry gets the powers and is running through and he's all naked and he's on fire. That song was the perfect choice for that goofy ass Barry. That worked so well. I don't know if there's any other needle drops that stand out to me as bothering me. So I defer to you guys if there are any that bothered you.
I think the first time we meet Michael Keaton and it goes kind of slow motion, I thought the music, like we're introducing Michael Keaton back as Batman. Yeah. I don't know if I need like a needle drop right there. I feel like Andy uses the music more for the action sequences. Yeah. Whereas I feel like in Transformers, it was just kind of the background music. It was like opening shot, Wu-Tang is coming in.
Right.
He seems to use music for action. Like the final battle scene also, when the two Barrys decide to like, let's start kicking some ass again, another music. I almost would rather just have a really great superhero score. Give me like some sort of Flash, you know, something that I could say, oh, that's the Flash score. Kind of like Wonder Woman or Man of Steel has, instead of using a score, he kind of went to music, pop music. And I just don't think it worked for me as well as a really great score by say Hans Zimmer or something. Benny, did it bother you at all?
You know, I apparently am deaf because people complain about this. They complain about any of the Spider-Verse. I don't know what the hell any of them are talking about. I don't hear any of these things. I don't notice them. So, no, it didn't bother me. I didn't even know what happened.
You're just like, oh, there's some sort of music playing. Does it bother me?
Yeah, it was 25 or 6 to 4. That was the Chicago song that they were playing with Keaton. I thought it was an odd choice. So I know that stood out to me for sure. So.
Yeah, so I don't know. Like for me, it's just like really like what about that song is right for introducing Michael Keaton back as Batman? Just give me the Batman music, give me the temporary Batman music, which they do sprinkle in here a few times. Which every time I was just like, oh, beautiful. All right, is there any before we go and we do our final thoughts? Is there any sequence in this film that is a highlight for you? Is it the jailbreak for Supergirl? Is it the big battle to end with Zod? Is it maybe some of the more comedic moments between Barry and younger Barry? I'll start with you, Benny. What sequence do you kind of really sticks out? Because I always say, if you're going to see a great movie, it always has at least one sequence that you could show somebody outside of the rest of the movie, and they'll be like, damn, that was awesome. So what's that scene for you, Benny?
There are two scenes that stick out to me. The first one is like, it's when Supergirl just screams and she punches Zod in the face. I was like, that is a moment that could be a Supergirl moment climax. I could see that. And then the other one I think it's actually poorly done, but it's when and this is completely nostalgic, you know, goggles, when Michael Keaton is, you want to get nuts, let's get nuts. I actually think it's crappily delivered. I think it doesn't need to be in there, but I don't care. It's nostalgia. I loved it.
Awesome. What about you, Roka? What sequence really stuck out to you?
Oh, it's certainly the Supergirl breakout sequence. That was awesome because, you know, now he's fully committed. They're flying in that plane. The two of them having a conversation behind Dad, you know, and not wanting, you ask him. I don't want to ask him. You ask him, you know, the whole sequence, him, the young Barry taking the picture, the video of Supergirl, essentially implying they might have kids someday, which I think is hilarious. And then when they jump in and you get full Michael Keaton, and aware of old Batman. Like, he's like, oh, this is going to hurt. And he jumps down into. So seeing all of the things that they do. And then they still have those comedic moments like that Russian scientist that walks out and Batman does this and he doesn't move at all. And eventually Barry like knocks him into the wall. But Barry gets shot in the leg. The second Barry gets shot in the leg. So adding another. So all of it, plus seeing Supergirl there and seeing her reaction, seeing her emaciated. And then when she sees this, when she gets the sun and her thing of like flying around and beating the shit out of everybody. And then they escape. So for me, that whole prison breakout sequence from going onto the plane and in there and then escaping was the highlight of the movie, bar none, of all the scenes.
I gotta agree with Roka. That's for the second they get into that Batwing to the moment they get back to the house. That is the section of the movie where I was geeking out. You get to see Michael Keaton in a way we never seen him before as Batman.
Yeah.
Really brutal, agile, using the weapons, using the cape. There's that great callback where he's like, how much do you weigh? I love that. That to me just tickled my brain of nostalgia. So yeah, I agree. To me, the breakout sequence is, I think, the highlight of the film. And you know, I wish the ending was the highlight. I wish that final battle was the highlight.
I know, dude.
And it's good. No. There's good stuff in there. There's some really, if you're a comic book fan, there's some really cool stuff in there. There's no doubt about it. I think one of the bigger moments in the end of the film is when Batman, you know, ejects out of the plane and starts just throwing bombs on that one Kryptonian and is like just jumping around. Like, we never got to see that kind of agile Michael Keaton. Yeah. And so I really was excited to see the technology of today used with the Michael Keaton of yesterday. So to me, while the third act is good, that Siberian scene is just chef's kiss. Yeah. I will say, Zod, I agree with what you said earlier, Zod. Michael Shannon basically FaceTimed his whole performance.
You can tell.
Right? It's just a CG. Yeah. He literally just, you know, they FaceTimed. He did this. He said what he had to say, and they digitally put his head onto that body. It didn't feel like he was ever actually there or on set or doing anything except for calling in. And
they brought the other actress back who played his right-hand man, in essence, right-hand woman, and she didn't get a word. So it's just like, what the fuck? It was confusing to me. That they decide, like, that's the thing that about the movie that I think is a bit, it's the same way I felt about Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. Don't ask the audience to do the homework before you show the final sequence. You've got to do the homework. You're the director. Yeah. Give that life, you know? Let us know the Manson family more. Let us see what they did. Let us see what these particular people did so they deserve the brutal beatdown that they get at the end of the movie. Same thing here with Zod. Let us see more of it other than just words back and forth. We have to have more than just that to really flesh out the terror and the danger of Zod. The up and down, breaking things and saving the kid, that did a little bit of the work, but there could have been more here that we would have enjoyed.
Yeah, the whole thing with the kid felt a little tacked on.
Yes.
It really didn't feel like it was fleshed out very well. All right, well, guys, if you're wondering why Moose hasn't talked for a while, he had a, you know, who knows what he had to do. He might be Batman. He might have had to jump out and save somebody. But he will be back next week. Before we go, let's just give our final thoughts. Basically, I just want to know overall thoughts on the movie. I think we basically covered. Where does this sit with you in as far as the bigger picture of DCU? Do you want to see a Flash sequel? Do you feel like it's time for Ezra to leave the role and should James Gunn just be like, all right, you had your chance. Your movie didn't do as well. You're out of here. Because I think Michael Keaton was supposed to be like the new Nick Fury of the DCEU.
Yeah, yeah.
And that doesn't seem like it's happening anymore. No. So, yeah, Roka, overall, what are your thoughts on The Flash and where do you think it goes from here? Do you think this was Ezra's last dance?
Yeah, I think it should be, and I hope it is, the swan song. There's just too much drama, man. You stood by the person. I get it. They have stuff going on, and certainly they thanked Zaslav at the premiere. So all of that is done. You've closed the loop on that. Move on from it. It's too much drama, and let James Gunn establish something new. There's no bigger defender of the Zack Snyder universe than me in the world of DC, without the toxicity, obviously. But I say it's time. It's done. He's never coming back. Unless Zaslav just wants to fuck with people, he's never coming back to do it. So why keep it alive? You know, you got to cut it. Let James Gunn and Peter Safran do the thing. In fact, if you brought Zach back a year or two from now, I think it was such a detriment because then you're asking the fans to split their allegiance, and that'd be such a fuck you to James Gunn and Peter Safran. So I hope Zaslav does not do that. But yeah, I hope this is it. This is the end. We can wrap the bow. Please don't release Aquaman 2. And I think this one belongs in the upper tier of the DCEU films for sure. I think it deserves to be in the conversation for some of the best of those films, regardless of that Aquaman cameo at the end, which I thought was ridiculous. But
yeah, that totally makes sense. I can't wait for your review of Aquaman 2. I am going to be there.
It'll just be me with a baseball bat hitting a punching bag for an hour.
All right, Benny. So overall thoughts on the Flash. Do you think this is it for Ezra Miller and as Barry Allen? And, you know, where do you think it goes from here?
I think it needs to go nowhere from here. Like, you have to let James Gunn start over. Like, yeah. People are clearly done with the DCEU now. Let the DCU be what it's going to be, success or failure. Trying to patch this into it is just going to tie an anchor onto it and confuse people, and they don't need that. Like, I would love to see the young lady come back as Supergirl in James Gunn's universe. But outside of that, let the past die, you know, just move on.
Another very non-controversial film you just referenced. Yeah, you know, I'm a huge Zack Snyder fan of the DCU. I love Man of Steel. I love Batman v Superman. Zack Snyder's Justice League is one of my favorites, Wonder Woman. And it's sad to see that this was just so poorly handled by Warner Brothers that before it was even had a real chance, it was kind of cut off at the knees. I do agree that this probably has to be the end. I just feel bad for James Gunn because I don't know where you begin. I know he's got Superman legacy, but I don't even know where you begin to decide what to keep and what to cut off and who stays and who goes. It really does feel like the best way would be to just absolutely cut it off. But again, you have Aquaman, a $1 billion film sequel coming out. Blue Beetle sounds like they were able to kind of change direction during the making of the film. Originally it was going to be a streaming film. And they said, let's give this some more money. Let's make it an actual theatrical experience. And I don't know how much it's hard to trust James Gunn when he came out and said that this would be one of the best comic movies ever made. Cause I don't think I enjoy it and I think it's good. Yeah. I don't see that. I don't think it will be remembered as that way at all. So like what was James Gunn just trying to, you know, if I'm James Gunn, I'm talking down the Flash. I'm like, it's okay, guys. It's not great. But still go check it out. Because, you know, you want to set up your own DCEU. So it's a mess. I feel bad for James Gunn. I think he has a lot on his plate. And I wish him the best. I love these characters. I love the DC comics. Superman's one of my all-time favorites. And I want them nothing more than anything. I want them to be successful. And I want them to tell good stories with these characters. So it's a rough patch we're going through right now. It's a turnover. But I do like James Gunn, and I do hope that he's able to succeed and actually put some stabilization to this universe. Overall, it sounds like we all enjoyed this movie.
Yeah,
there's things to enjoy. It is just the expectations, I think, were set too high by the rumors, the screenings. I had a feeling when CinemaCon did their screening, nobody was coming out of the door like, oh, my God, one of the best. It felt very like, oh, yeah, I really liked it, but not quite the best movie that James Gunn was kind of promising all of us. So
I want to give credit to Jeff Snyder real quick, my co-host on the hot mic, because Jeff was one of the few people that came out of that screening and said, this isn't as good as people are saying it is. This is not, this is not a greatest of all time film. And there are issues with the third act and people went after Jeff. And now the same people went after Jeff are sitting there eating crow. And so there's a thing about being honest in your criticism that I think is essential and has been getting lost a lot as all these people rely on these studio contacts to be able to go to these things. It's really important to uplift the people who don't give a shit about that and tell their truth. And I think that's it's important in situations like this.
100%. Jeff, you know, he came over when we were watching the Celtics in the finals or the Eastern Conference finals. And he said the same thing to me. And one thing about Jeff, he will give you his honest opinion.
Yep.
No matter what. And, you know, I love him for that. All right, guys. Well, that's going to wrap our show. Sorry, Moose couldn't make it for the rest of the show. he'll be back next week with better internet. Back American internet. That's what we need. Get out of Canada. Get us that American high speed.
USA.
USA. all right, Benny, you'll be back next week as usual. I don't know what film we're talking about next week yet. We have that new Jennifer Lawrence comedy that's coming out. That's the only, I think, really big release this weekend. So we'll take a look at the film calendar and maybe we'll do something different. But I don't know. We'll decide that on our own. Roka, before we go, please tell everybody where they can find you and where they can check you out.
Yeah, you can always find me at The Roka Says on Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok, The Outlaw Nation on Twitch, and my YouTube channel, which, as I've talked about, The Hot Mic and The Jedi Way, Geek Buddies, and my own reviews and reactions. It's youtube.com/JohnRokaSays, The Outlaw Nation. So come hang out there and see all the stuff I got going on and my podcast, The Cinephiles, The Geek Buddies, and The Hot Mic that are out there for y'all to enjoy. Thanks for having me on, guys. This was a blast.
No, dude, thank you so much. Yeah. You know, huge fan of your channel and your content. Roka always has just great insight. And I love you. You know, I told you, I texted you this. You are one of the best, I think, interviewers on YouTube. Oh, whenever you have a director or an actor or writer on, I think it's some of the best interviews I see on YouTube. And I love the content you put out. Also, he was really positive about Expendables 4. Trail reaction.
Yes, I was. You know what it is.
Yeah, that's all I needed from John Rucka. So he's A+ in my book. All right, guys. Well, thanks again so much for listening. Come back next week. You can catch us on iTunes, Spotify. Follow me on Twitter at JT Movie Thinks, where I'll always put up the links for our shows. We try to drop them on Monday or Tuesday, depending on our schedule. But either way, guys, thanks so much for listening to the Extra Movie Butter Podcast. I hope you enjoy these calories. Goodbye.
Good night, everybody.